The Bears defense dominates Sunday night, and is it time to worry about that Rams offense? Also, the baffling decision to put Gronk on defense for Miami's miracle play. The Chiefs lose the chess match but win the game thanks to Mahomes. It might be time to rethink that Amari Cooper trade. And are we about to see a trend of defensive players interfering with group celebrations? We've got all that and much more from Week 14 on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. Week 14 Sunday had some of the craziest endings to games that you will ever see. But Andy, we're actually starting Sunday night in a bizarro game for 2018 because it was a lot of defense.
It was. We kind of thought that would be the case going in. I can't wait to go over these games, Gary, because we had the Colts upsetting the Texans. The Rams got upset by the Bears. Patriots lose to the Dolphins. Raiders beat the Steelers. And I am really eager to hear all of your breakdowns on strength of schedule for these remaining playoff teams. Broncos also losing to the Niners. Some great Gary Grambling strength of schedule analysis, very meaningful, coming up later in the show, as this week proved. Yeah. Once again,
I can't believe you couldn't do it last week, so you had to pull it out this week.
You do it every week. Every week, yeah. We bring up these NFL games, man. I love these games. Are high level, competitive every single week, and if you don't play your best, you're going to lose in the NFL. And the Rams are the first team that found that out, or I guess they were actually the last team. They played last.
That is true.
They're the first team we're talking about.
Now you're just conflating everything and just saying everything was according to strength of schedule and that sort of thing. That's not true. And by the way, I thought the 49ers might beat the Broncos.
That's how those strength of schedule things get treated, though. People go, oh, that's a win, that'll be a win, that's a loss, that's a win. It doesn't work that way, and we found that out a number of times on Sunday. That's why you have to pay attention to these games.
We did. The nice thing is nobody tanks in the NFL until you get to Week 17 and some teams rest some starters, which isn't really tanking, but that's a conversation for another day. We're starting Sunday night, Andy, where there was a ton of defense, and not necessarily the, like you said, when they had the Chiefs-Rams game, not that had a lot of defense, but you had explosive defensive plays leading to points. This game was more a matter of just shut down, clamps down defense, and some shaky quarterbacking. But, we'll start with the Bears' defense, I guess. They're not going to be able to host a playoff game, or I should say they won't host a divisional round or a conference title game in Chicago, most likely. But they are incredibly difficult to play against in that building right now.
It's a hard defense overall. We said, if you listen to our Thursday show, that the Bears match up very well to the Rams. I thought the Bears would win this game because of the way the Rams looked against the Lions last week and the way the Bears looked against the Giants. And I know the Bears lost that game in New York, but their defense, they were so clearly the better team. They're playing their brand of football, and they're really getting into their rhythm defensively. I figured if those teams played that way again this week, which they did, the Bears will dominate the Rams because the Rams right now are struggling to figure out their run-pass balance, which I never thought I'd say about a Sean McVay offense. Mm-hmm. And that changes the entire makeup of their passing game and the way Jared Goff looks. And their receivers have not had as much success against these blurry split safety zone coverages, which Detroit employed against them, took away their downfield passing game, and then Chicago employs that every week against everybody. So it was a totally unrhythmic performance by the Rams, and it looks like, oh, bad offense, they didn't show up tonight, and there's some of that, I'm sure, but bad offense is often created by great defense in the NFL, and that's exactly what the Bears did, and they've done that to a lot of teams this year.
Yeah, the Rams were, you had the pressure on one hand, but you also, they were just disjointed throughout this entire game. I can't remember them looking like this in a Sean McVay game, and we talked about this a little bit, looking back to last season and early this season when they were really rolling well, we kind of said, boy, we just haven't seen this offense be bad, just have an off game, have an off night, and they've kind of had two in a row now at this point, so I don't know. Obviously we talked about the Cooper Kupp injury a couple weeks ago and how that affects both their run game and their passing game. This has been a worrisome couple of games for them.
Well, I'm as big a McVay fan as anybody out there, as our listeners probably know. If you want if you want an issue of complaint about him, I do think he gets impatient with the run at times. I thought he did that in the wild card game against Atlanta and kind of got away from it a little bit. Last week against Detroit, their rushing numbers looked good in the end, but over the course of the flow of that game, the run game was really not super prevalent, and the numbers got inflated at the end when they were protecting a lead. The game against Denver earlier this year where they almost lost on the road, another cold weather game, by the way, and maybe that's something to keep in mind about these Rams, but McVay said afterwards, "I put our offense in some terrible positions. The guys bailed me out." My guess is what he was saying is, I, among other things, I need to run the ball more. And then I thought that was an issue again tonight. So it's odd for a team that's built on the outside zone game and has Todd Gurley. You would think you'd never get away from running the ball. And I understand a little bit why they might against Chicago, I guess, if Floyd and Mack are setting the edges and taking away the outside zone game. They got Akeem Hicks to deal with.
Yeah.
But that's your identity. That's your foundation. And then it raises the question, okay, if you're not comfortable doing that, then how do you amend your identity without totally getting away from it? And now we're getting into a Jared Goff conversation. What's he comfortable doing? Because I Gary, he did not look comfortable tonight on those shotgun dropbacks. He is a under center dropback, play action, rhythm, anticipation thrower. When you go shotgunning, you're not giving him that run element to the design. Now he's scanning the entire field, and it didn't help that his O-line was uneven in pass protection.
Mm-hmm.
Just a mess of a performance by the Rams in this game. But again, most of this stuff's created by the Bears. Good defense.
Absolutely. No, Goff did not look comfortable pushing the ball down the field. They did not really get anything going as far as the screen game goes. This was a bad performance, and you know, they were kind of being dared to run a little bit in the second half, and even then they couldn't get that much going. I think Gurley had like a 10 or 12 yard run at one point where he kind of said, well, can they chip away at a drive that way, and they just never were able to really put together a semblance of anything. Even when they burned timeouts to sort of set things up, when they came out of those
right.
timeouts, I know this is an NBA thing saying, you know, what are you drawing up in the timeout type of thing, but they came out and got nothing out of those timeouts, which was especially problematic because then, you know, when you're trailing, you need those timeouts in the second half.
Well, and this was a game where their defense made some plays. It was the Bears' offense made some plays for their defense. John Johnson and Marcus Peters had those interceptions on the Trubisky overthrows, and maybe that's something to keep an eye on is Trubisky and what's going on with his ball placement. Missed one. Maybe this happens. Maybe we say this all the time. Every team has a bad game. We said that about the Saints against the Cowboys. But this right now is a couple of bad games in a row for the Rams. Only one loss, but a couple bad games. And you start to wonder if maybe a little bit of a blueprint is starting to get out there on them.
Yeah, and you did mention the cold weather, and we should point out there's still a game and a half up on the Bears for that number two seed in the NFC, and obviously the one seed is within reach of the Saints. Lose again, but the Saints obviously have the tiebreaker. They have the same record, but there is a chance the Rams don't have to go anywhere outside in cold weather in the playoffs, which might be good for them. Although going to New Orleans will not be good for them, because if they had won out, they would have been hosting all their playoff games.
But we're assuming that everyone's going to win every game we expect. That's what you just did. That's a backdoor strength of schedule. That's a backdoor strength of schedule method right there.
It's not. I knew you were going to jump on
it.
I knew you were going to jump on it. That's why I paused awkwardly. But there's something to be said for just being able to win. If you win your games, being able to have a certain playoff seeding. There's something to be said for that. I'm not saying who they're playing or any of that anymore. That's for you, Andy. Before we move on, just a quick note here. You know, your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of the Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your hair or to learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. Look, as we move through our 20s or our 30s or our 40s, there are things that we just can't control in life anymore. Maybe you put on a little too much weight. You can't move around in the pickup basketball games the way you used to. These things can affect your confidence, but your hair, that's something we can all control. So go to hairclub.com/10things today for a free hair analysis and a free take-home hair care kit, all valued at over $300. That's hairclub.com/10things for a free hair analysis and free hair care kit. hairclub.com/10things. Experience your hair and your life at its best only with Hair Club. I'm certain you'll love the club. All right. The finish in Miami today, Andy. We might end up talking only about the finish in this game because it was incredible on one hand for the Dolphins, just great execution by their guys, and it was mind-bogglingly, I don't want to say dumb because we're talking about Bill Belichick, but I don't understand why Rob Gronkowski is on the field when you have Ryan Tannehill in his bum shoulder 69 yards away from the end zone. Maybe it was some symbolism with that number in Gronk, and that's what they were going for there. But there's not going to be an end zone jump ball situation there. So to take Devin McCourty off the field and to put Gronk on, and yes, it's very unlikely they get burned on that play anyway, but they did. It ended up mattering. I just don't understand the logic behind it.
Let's not put Bill Belichick in that Aaron Donald / mega Aaron Rodgers class where he's a god and we're not allowed to say anything bad about him because he never makes mistakes. That can be a bad coaching move. And maybe it's not him. Maybe it's on Brian Flores.
Brian Flores, yeah.
But ultimately, it stops with Belichick. It's his responsibility. So I can't – that's what I didn't understand either. When I saw the play and I thought, wait, it was Rob Gronkowski out there. So the only thing I can think of for why they maybe did it that way, there were 7 seconds left at the time that the play was called. Is it possible they thought Miami would get a quick strike, get the clock stopped, and get out of bounds or something, and then rush to the line and throw a Hail Mary, and maybe they were worried they couldn't get the substitution done on time? If Miami doesn't substitute, then it's hard for you to substitute. Remember, your players are not allowed down near the goal line, so whoever's subbing in would be running from near the middle of the field to get back into that Hail Mary defense spot. So that's the only thing I could think of, is that they weren't expecting the Hail Mary right away, but they thought we might be giving up 20 yards here and there's a second or two left and now they're at midfield and they're in position for a Hail Mary and maybe they didn't think they could get the substitution in on time. I don't know. I mean, I'm just guessing it. That's why. But They had timeouts left too. If I were, I think they had two. So
they
that
had two timeouts that left. Yep.
So that which would that that means that theory's got that should go out the window then. I mean, maybe that was their thinking, but the logic says you can call timeout then if you're New England. I don't know what they did for that. I don't know why they did that. I'm sure someone asked. I would love to see whoever asked Belichick and what the response was.
Boy, I mean this. I'm not talking strength of schedule, by the way, Andy, but this pushes the Patriots back behind the Chiefs. Chiefs' magic number is 2 to clinch the number 1 seed in the AFC. That's 2 combined Chiefs wins and Patriots losses going forward here. New England, last 4 times they've had to play on the road in the postseason, they have not gone to the Super Bowl. That goes all the way back to the last time they had to play a road game in the AFC playoffs and made the Super Bowl was all the way back in 2004. So this is a big deal for them not to be very much in contention. They're not eliminated from it, but they're not particularly close to that 1 seed in the AFC anymore. This was that last play kind of epitomized his performance for them. It was a sloppy performance. Tom Brady made a huge mistake at the end of the first half. He ended up they had no timeouts left. They had a 3rd and goal with 7 seconds when the snap was off. He had a couple chances to throw the ball away. He ended up it was 14 seconds left. He ended up tucking it and taking the sack, which ran out the clock. They missed out on a chip shot field goal. So they just left so many points, so many plays on the field in this game, and it ends up burning them.
Well, and also let's. I'm sure the Miami guys. I'm sure Adam Gase listened to every word of this podcast, and he's probably saying right now, "Why don't you give us some credit too? We play New England tough. Miami has matched up well to New England at other times, and some teams just do that, and that's a factor as well." Interestingly, is Miami's top corner, Xavien Howard, was not even in this game, and he's been a big reason they've matched up well at times with New England. So good overall performance by the Dolphins. They ran the ball at will on New England. That helps, too. Miami's a different offense when their run game's going. But some bizarre Patriot plays in this one, certainly.
Yeah, it really was. And this is 5 wins in 6 matchups with the Patriots at home. 5 wins in the last 6 home dates with the Patriots for the Dolphins. So good things happening there. They're still in that playoff hunt. The playoff hunts are weird, by the way, Andy. We're not going to do the full breakdown.
They're always weird because people haven't played enough games yet. Every year there's 8 or 9 teams in the hunt at this point. That's the other thing that drives me nuts. Let's just play these games and analyze these games. This is college football where we just do the math of it and talk about schedules and who might do what. Let's actually talk some real football where we get to be NFL analysts, not college analysts.
I'm just pointing out, Andy, it's weird because in the NFC, everyone thinks the NFC is this big, powerful conference. The 6 and 7 teams are still very much in it. Very much in it. They're only going to be a game or a half game out by the time Monday Night Football wraps up. So it's going to be interesting. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm sensitive. I had a cranky day. It's not just you, but the show is going to continue to go this way. I'm sorry. We can talk about it tomorrow if you want.
You are paranoid and angry in this holiday season. So let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys get the season sweep of the Eagles in overtime on the deflected touchdown for Amari Cooper. Touchdown number 3 in this game for Amari Cooper, by the way. And that's how the Cowboys finish off the Eagles in this one, with a clock-eating, lengthy overtime drive. They end up running 93 plays in this game. They had the ball for 45 minutes. This is a tough day for the Eagles defense to be out there for that long. But yeah, the Amari Cooper play, that ends up being another really weird finish.
It kind of overshadows a little bit what was a brilliant game by him. I mean, he's been a big difference. My buddy Jeff Simmons, who listens to our podcast and emails me tidbits every once in a while, he pointed out, because we talked on the show going into this game on the Thursday show, what's changed with Dallas. So they're on this 4-game, now it's a 5-game winning streak, and I talked about Xavier Suafilo has solidified the spot at left guard, and Jeff emailed and said that's also when the Amari Cooper trade basically went into effect. That's been a factor. They also made an offensive line coach change. Paul Alexander out, Mark Colombo in. Hudson Hauk was brought back in as a consultant. So there's been some positive changes in Dallas, but this whole Amari Cooper thing, it's starting to make me look really bad. I didn't think this would move the meter hardly at all for this offense, and it unequivocally has so far moved the meter, and in a meaningful way too. I mean, they're going to win the NFC East most likely based on their strength of schedule, Gary.
They are, and look, we'll have plenty of time to revisit the Amari Cooper trade, and you know, obviously it's not only a first round pick, but they're going to have to give him a significant contract going forward. But at the moment, it looks like they might want to give him a significant contract. This has been some really good football he's played since he's arrived there. He, by the way, if you, I don't know if they even put this at the end of the broadcast stuff on Game Pass, but he actually gave like one of the most detailed and thorough breakdowns of a play I've ever seen in one of those like immediate on the field with Aaron Andrews interviews right afterwards. She was like, "What happened on that play?" And he gave a really specific breakdown of what happened on that play. Good for him.
That's why I like that. And I appreciate that you let me get away with the strength of schedule. That was all for you, and you didn't say anything about that. What Amari Cooper does for Dallas, he gives them an intermediate target, which is how you have to play with Dak Prescott, because I don't think Prescott's a vertical passer, but he's a ball distributor at the intermediate levels, and Cooper's very good at uncovering at the intermediate levels.
I actually just wanted to make the strength of schedule a more natural part of our flow and a more, I don't know, natural part of our lives here, Andy, at this point. But Dak Prescott, by the way, he had three turnovers in this one. If you're wondering how Dallas could run 93 plays and have the ball for 45 minutes and end up going to overtime, they did turn over three times. Dak had a couple bad turnovers in this one. He bounced back, though. And when this sort of mirrored their Sunday night matchup a couple weeks ago, where it was not many points in the first half and then a lot of points in the second half, and Dak went shot for shot with a lot of Amari Cooper in this one. Amari ended up 10 catches for 217 and a touchdown. And yeah, we're gonna have to revisit Amari Cooper a little bit in this one. One more note on Cooper. I should fill in what he said in the post game. He basically said they killed the Eagles on slants in the first meeting. He knew on that play that they'd be expecting a slant. He tried to stem the route to show a fade. He knew it wouldn't work. And he just kind of like, and yeah, the guy was there and got deflected, and I caught it.
It's hard to run a slant after stemming to show a fade. I mean, those are two very different routes. So that's an interesting approach by him. And that I see that when I hear something like that, then I'd like to know the teaching points, what kind of freedom is provided and the timing of the way that play is taught. In other words, is Amari Cooper taught that, hey, you've got some time to run this slant, or you've got to get into this slant quickly? Because I know on fades, for example, if the and this gets into the red zone, which is where this play we're talking about, I assume that's the play, right? He's talking about what happened on the game-winning play. So you get into the red zone, and a fade, for example, if the quarterback's in shotgun, you've got different timing as a receiver versus under center. Shotgun, you've got to get into your fade immediately because the ball's coming out quicker because the shotgun makes the drop back happen quicker. Well, if he's under center, then everything's slower and you've got more time to finesse your fade. I'm wondering if they teach slants the same way, and if it matters where he probably matters where he lines up, if he's outside or in the slot. But those are the kind of little details that coaches and players go over, and it's the kind of details that Dallas, we've been saying, they need to get better at in their passing game, and Cooper might be presenting them that dimension, the details of the passing game.
Yeah, I guess the bottom line is the play the play didn't work. They caught a break. They had a lot of plays that worked in this game. This
that
one
too.
Didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate when that happens. There's two things that are going to drive me nuts on this film. You already heard me gripe about the first one. The 93 plays by Dallas is going to take forever to watch on film because each of those plays are individual entities. And then it all comes down to kind of a fluky play at the end that I don't like. I'm not a fan of fluky plays. I used to be until I started breaking this stuff down. And I thought, this just goes against everything I've learned. What do I do now? Why did I explain that fade back there?
The Cowboys, they even if that pass was broken up, they would have kicked a short field goal and maybe hung on anyway. But let's go to Baltimore, Kansas City here. This one was a really interesting matchup. I would say in this one, the Ravens defense won the chess match against the Chiefs offense. But Patrick Mahomes just made a series of ridiculous plays, as he does. I mean, he had if you have Patrick Mahomes in fantasy, you're mildly disappointed by 377 yards and two touchdowns in this game. He made so many plays that had no right being made to keep the Chiefs in it and then eventually win it.
So what I've learned in this industry working at Sports Illustrated and working with you and Mark Moravec and all our editors, Gary, and figuring out what stories do we do and how do we do them, when do we do them, it's better to be early on something than late. You can't be late. You can't be late to a narrative. You have to be early. That's why we did the Zach Taylor, Press Taylor story this week, those young quarterback coaches, because someone else is going to point them out first before those guys are well-known, and now we're late, so we want to be the first. So I'm gonna be too early on this conversation, but I think this is a conversation that will come up one day and probably sooner than we guess. Do we start looking at Patrick Mahomes as the most talented passer we've ever seen instead of that guy in Green Bay? Talking
he's
just
up
pure
there.
Talent as a passer.
The one thing I'll say about Aaron Rodgers is, when I think back to his best throws, there are so many throws where it's like he's on the move, he's throwing to a guy who's covered, he's like throwing at a defender's ear hole, and manages to, just come up with a completion. Mahomes, when he extends plays, not always, like we had that, you know, that play where he was like on a dead sprint against Oakland last week, and then he ended up fitting in a laser throw into the end zone to one of the tight ends who's not Travis Kelce.
No, it was Harris, and I tweeted the play because I was so blown away by it. I thought that was the best throw I'd seen all season.
I feel
Until
like
I saw
most,
that one today, the no look throw against Baltimore.
The no look throw was insane. He had another one, which was you couldn't even really tell that much from the broadcast angle. It was just such a strange looking play because it looked like he was about to take off, and then Spencer Ware starts heading down the sideline, and Mahomes just sort of flicks a sidearm bullet, and you didn't realize how tight the window was until you saw the lower angle and that sort of thing. But I will say, when Mahomes extends plays, a lot of times it tends to be he's throwing to like a wide open space and Tyreek Hill is running it down, or aesthetically, I guess that's, I don't know if you, well, most people might like that more, but I feel like the Rodgers throws on the run where he basically whizzes it by a defender's ear is something. If we're just talking about the elite, the best of the best, I think those throws are of a higher level of difficulty.
I think Mahomes is a better weird arm angled thrower than Rodgers. I think Stafford's been the best I've ever seen at weird platform throws, and Mahomes is much better than Stafford at throwing from different angles. So we give it to Mahomes there. I think Mahomes is a little bit inconsistent if we're talking the greatest that we've seen. Again, just pure talent passing, not best passer, but talent. But when you talk pure talent passing, it feels like at some point in the conversation, consistency of precision accuracy needs to factor in somewhere, even though that's not a pure apples for apples, that's a talent play.
Yeah.
So anyway, I do think Rodgers is a steadier, big-time wow thrower. He's also probably the better downfield thrower. Mahomes, what's amazing is Mahomes, for as great as he is, he misses a few every game too, and I think that's going to get cleaned up. I don't think he's going to miss for the rest of his career, and he's going to get better at his reads, and he's already great there. This is a fun story that's unfolding here, but I don't get wild by guys throwing the ball very often, at least not on the throws he does. Sometimes it cover two hole deep outside throws, some of those gutsy throws I like, but these slants and these intermediate throws that he makes, they're wowing me.
Yeah, look, he had when they were down late in this game, they were down a touchdown in the final minutes, and they had a 4th and 9 where he was immediately pressured and had to sprint out right. And it's just one of those plays where most guys don't have the arm strength to be able to throw it back across the field at that point. But, you know, he had enough to find Tyreek Hill coming back across the middle of the field. They end up converting a 4th down touchdown later in the drive. They were on the brink for most of this one. And like I said, the Ravens, all those disguises, a lot of times they put basically everyone on the line of scrimmage almost and sort of...
Which is what New England did, remember?
Yes.
You said New England gave them trouble with that. So that's we kind of Ravens, thought it might be a case going in.
Ravens did a lot of the same. They put a lot of pressure on him. This is probably the most pressure he had faced all season, but he came out. He made the plays when he had to make them, and a lot of them were just a matter of a guy being supremely talented and being able to do things that no one else can do. I think he's the MVP at this point. I think he has separated himself significantly from Drew Brees.
Brees makes it look easy, and that doesn't mean it is easy, though. So that's not – I mean, it's – I don't want to take
Fair
away
enough.
From Brees because, yeah, I mean, that's a well-oiled machine that he has built, though. He builds that machine. So, but it's going to be an interesting conversation. And I do think Aaron Donald belongs in the conversation, and I think the guy we're about to talk about next belongs in the conversation. Or I guess next. Yeah, let's do him next. Gary, I'm going to be the host here. You're going to follow me.
You're
now.
Not even – You're so off of strength of schedule that you're not even looking at our schedule anymore. You're just going nuts.
Our next game will be the 5-8 Bengals at the 10-3 Chargers. Chargers won. Gary, what did you think of the game?
That was Andy, I know you're very high on Phillip Rivers right now, and you thought it was very, despite the closeness of the final score, you thought it was a very Phillip Rivers-ish way that the Chargers sort of established the lead early in this one.
Yeah, the Chargers do two things really well. One of them is Austin Ekeler and all the misdirection stuff. It's not just Ekeler, but he's often involved somehow, whether he's getting the ball or he's part of the jet action, whatever it is, their backfield screen game, some of their run designs, their misdirection game is pretty refined. And then the other thing is they do a tremendous job of getting their wide receivers matched on your linebackers or your safeties. And last week it was the linebackers at Pittsburgh. This week in Pittsburgh, they're a one-deep safety defense. That's why it was more linebackers. This week they face a two-deep safety defense, Cincinnati, and so it's the safeties that get attacked by the wide receivers. And Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, our guy, the big, strong targets, they're getting inside. And Ken Wisenhunt and Phillip Rivers, they do a tremendous job of building the offense that way. I think Rivers runs the offense at the line of scrimmage as well as any quarterback in football, and his numbers are up there. What do they have, the second-best record in the AFC? I think he's absolutely in the MVP conversation. He's having his best season of his career.
All right. I don't think he can win it. I think Patrick Mahomes is going to win it. I think
Drew Brees
is going to finish second. But
let's say Rivers goes into Kansas City, outplays Mahomes Thursday night, and wins that game.
I wouldn't count it because it's Thursday night football, and Thursday night football is crap. But
that's unfortunate because that crappy matchup is going to decide probably the AFC seeding for everybody.
It is incredibly unfortunate that that is the Thursday night matchup.
I've gotten over the Thursday night thing a little bit. I don't think there's a big difference. Well, okay. I used to hate it, but every team has to play on Thursday now, so it's often the same. And I like the Thursday games on TV a lot more than I like the other games. I don't know. When you watch the film, you don't ever see it and go, Thursday, I can see it's Thursday. They're sloughing out there. They're tired. It doesn't show up that way on film.
It is consistently problematic for the road team on Thursday Night Football. I mean, that it's to the point where it's not really a fluke. It's just the way it is. It's hard to travel and play a game on 3 days rest. And the other thing is, the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill limped off the field in this game. We don't know if he's going to be able to turn around and play on Thursday night. Spencer Ware was knocked out of that game. So the Chiefs might be playing with 60% of their offense when they play this game for, a chance to clinch the division.
Valid complaints, all very valid. The one I think they do need to adjust the scheduling, the home team on Thursday should have to play on the road on the previous Sunday, and I know that's more variables for Howard Katz and those guys at NFL films that figure out the schedule in the offseason. That's more for them to deal with, but I am with you on that.
It is. It is more for them to deal with. They can deal with it, though. Andy, do you have any issues with the fact that the Chargers, this ended up being a close game. It was the Jeff Driscoll Bengals. Had the Bengals converted a two-point conversion with a little less than 2 minutes to go, this would have been a tie game late.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the Chargers offense was inconsistent after the hot start. That's true, and that doesn't help my Phillip Rivers MVP case, so that's why I wasn't going to say anything, Gary, but since you're uncovering that, I think there's something to be said, though, for establishing a lead your way and then keeping the game in your command. It never felt like this game was out of Los Angeles's command. I don't think there were any turnovers at all in the game, at least none, no meaningful turnovers that I recall. And it doesn't bug me, I guess. It doesn't. I like their defense too in Los Angeles. I think Bosa's coming along a little bit more. Derwin James, I love more every day. I'm bullish right now on the Chargers.
And how about their rookie kicker? They got a kicker now, Andy. Michael Badgley, 4 for 4, hit the long one at the end of the first half.
Every time I hear his name at first, I think, wait, what did you say? And then I go, oh, okay. And that's it. And that's all I'm going to say about Michael Badgley.
Let's go. Let's go do a sad story. The Carolina Panthers go to Cleveland. Browns win this one. Nice win for the Browns here. 26-20 was the final. This feels like it is all for the Carolina Panthers. This is 5 straight losses. It started with that Thursday night massacre in Pittsburgh, and they had a couple of bad break-filled games where they lost to Detroit, lost to Seattle, and the last 2 weeks they've just been outplayed in Tampa and now in Cleveland.
One of the hardest things to deal with in the NFL is hiding a vulnerable cornerback, and right now Dante Jackson, their rookie corner, has a big, shiny X on his back. And we wondered, I wrote this Friday, I don't remember if we talked about it on the podcast Thursday or not, but I figure Cleveland's going to come out, they're going to line up in whatever formations they can to figure out exactly where Jackson is, and they're going to go after him deep, and that's what they did on the very first play of the game. They went after Jackson deep, and Mayfield made an unbelievable throw. It traveled, I think, 67 yards. Most of them were air yards. It was Breshad Perriman. Remember him? The Ravens guy who's actually playing better each week. He's a lot more of a diverse receiver here in Cleveland than he ever was in Baltimore. Freddie Kitchens is doing a great job at offensive coordinator, and Mayfield's decisiveness that he plays with is a great reflection on him. This is going. If this continues three more weeks, the Browns will be one of the most interesting quarterback and head coaching and offensive coordinator search combination stories that we have in the NFL this year. Because they look like a whole different offense for Freddie Kitchens. And his game plans tell a story. That's what I like. It's not just individual plays. There's a semblance and a continuity to what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, Perriman, Dante Jackson is a couple of combine stars right there. Those are two of the fastest guys in football. Carolina, though, Cam Newton's shoulder has been an issue. Everyone knows it's an issue at this point. He hasn't played as well as he did in the first half of the season. But, I mean, look, they're sitting at 6-7 right now. As I said earlier, Andy, it's very interesting. All the 6-7 teams, by the time the Monday night football game wraps up, there'll be no more than one game out of the last playoff spot in the NFC. But Panthers it seems like this is over for them.
Well, but you just said at the front of that sentence, it's not at all over for them.
But they're playing so poorly, and their quarterback is so hampered by all the hits he's taking. Do we have to revisit? You're not going to want to revisit that. There has to be some solution to keeping Cam Newton in one piece over the course of a season.
Well, so I don't think it's the hits. Their offensive line was not good today. And Chris Clark at left tackle struggled a lot with Myles Garrett in a variety of ways. Garrett beat him inside. He beat him outside with speed, beat him with power. Garrett's a more technically gifted, mechanically sound player than we think. And that was an issue in this game. I don't think it's been an issue much of the season, though. I think it's been overall a decently achieving offensive line given what we thought they'd be there. I mean, they've got some makeshift guys in there. Maybe it's catching up to them now. My buddy Greg Cosell, though, at NFL Films, I was reading through his film notes this week. He made a great point about Cam Newton. Now, Cam Newton's an arm thrower. And the reason his ball sails every once in a while, and he had a few more in this game, every game he's got some that he's just going to miss on. He's going to be off target. Remember a few weeks ago, Seattle, that two-point conversion, worst time of the game to be off target, but it's going to happen every week with Cam. The reason he's like that is because his legs do not always coincide with his arm. And he's not in that Patrick Mahomes conversation that we had earlier. Is he? How good is the arm talent in and of itself? He's a thrower like most guys who needs his lower body to be aiding his upper body most of the time. Most guys need it all the time. Newton needs it most of the time. And he puts a lot of stress on his arm by asking so much of it and not putting his lower body into the throws. And Greg points out that's going to do more for your shoulder. I'm not saying that's what's causing it, but I think that has to be part of the conversation. We're talking about a quarterback with a bum shoulder who for his entire career has been a very unsound mechanical passer.
That's interesting. I really hadn't thought of that. It's like a pitcher with a violent motion.
Yes. No, it's exactly like it's a great analogy.
All right. Well, let's go. Speaking of banged up quarterbacks here, let's go to Oakland, where the Raiders upset the Steelers. This was really a bizarre game. You had Ben Roethlisberger get hurt late in the first half, and the most insight we have into this injury is it's a rib injury. He did not come out for the second half. He did come out about midway through the third quarter and then just stayed on the sideline. Rib injury, I mean, the conventional wisdom with a rib injury or like a broken bone in your back or something like that is that it's just there's no real good way to heal it. It's just a matter of pain tolerance at this point. And when Roethlisberger did come back into the game, it was after the Raiders had taken the lead on the Steelers. The defense had held the Raiders down for most of the second half, though Josh Dobbs couldn't get anything going with his offense. Roethlisberger came back in, led a, it was a six-play, 75-yard drive in 2:25 to retake the lead, and he looked very uncomfortable doing it, but they just sort of did whatever they wanted once Roethlisberger was in the lineup. Raiders answer with a touchdown of their own, and then the Steelers end up getting a perfectly executed hook and lateral, James Washington to Juju Smith-Schuster, to set up a 40-yard field goal attempt to tie this game, and Chris Boswell slipped, missed another kick, basically kicked it into the back of the offensive line, and that was it. That's how the Raiders won it. But Steelers are kind of their margin for error is gone. They're up a half game on the Ravens. They're fortunate that the Ravens did not hang on in Kansas City, and they have to win some games. And I don't know what's going to happen if Roethlisberger is limited in some way down the stretch.
Yeah, I don't either. Because I've learned with Roethlisberger, I mean, there are times we've thought he's better when he's injured. He looks better when he's injured. Easy for me to say. I don't know what he's going through. I don't know if he should have been out there sooner, how it felt, what the pain was. We don't know any of that stuff. One thing that's interesting to me that just keeps showing up, and every week I think, oh, okay, it was probably just this week. And then the next week it kind of happens again. It happened again in this game. Juju Smith-Schuster's putting up much, much bigger numbers than Antonio Brown lately. And you wonder if there's a structural shift on the horizon for that offense. It's not to the point where defenses are treating Brown. He's still the guy. They treat him, they roll the coverage to him. So they're not treating these guys differently overall, but there have been a few snaps here and there where it's Smith-Schuster that sees a double team, and you wonder if he would have seen that double team earlier in the year. Whatever it is, might be a power shift in Pittsburgh's passing game coming soon.
It's like a fantasy football note there, Andy.
Yes, it is. Start them, sit them, baby. Fantasy football is playoff time, isn't it, for fantasy football? That's what I've always liked about fantasy football. It's that it absolutely peters out. It gets into week 17, and I think a lot of leagues have adjusted this. I could be wrong. I haven't played. I just fantasy football, my relation to it is it's what I nod my head at when people start talking to me about it. Oh, here's my fantasy team. Guess how they're doing. You probably we all get that. We know how that goes. But don't the Super Bowls of fantasy football, don't they happen in week 17 and you don't even know if your guys are going to play or not?
The old-fashioned conventional leagues just play week 16 is the Super Bowl, and then you don't play week 17 because too many starters
sit. Okay, so they did rectify that because that used to be – didn't it used to be an issue?
It's a dumb way to every league I run, which is down to two, thank God.
Every league you run?
That I run, that I like commission, that I'm the Roger Goodell.
How do you
Goodell
have time for this? How do you have time?
And you have
for
no the personal conduct investigations I have to oversee, and then the suspensions and the fines and all these things. It's really busy. No, the way we do it, the way we've done it for the past, like, I don't know, I want to say 7 or 8 years, we play regular season through week 16. We skip week 17 because week 17, there's too many starters sitting and all that. And then we do the teams that made the playoffs do a weekly playoff league, drafting playoff players, and the top scorers move on to the next round. And then what would be our fantasy Super Bowl happens between two people it during the conference championship games, and then Super Bowl.
So now you're not even playing with your team. I mean, I quit listening halfway. You're not even playing with your own teams, it sounds like. But
I'm surprised I didn't just hear a click and you walk away.
Yeah. No. Two things about fantasy, and then we'll move on to real life again here. One, when you go up and you tell someone about their let me give them the quicker one. I think if you should get like 0.25 extra points for each point if your guy won. So if I got a running back and he scores a touchdown, I guess that's usually worth 6, then make the touchdown worth 7 or 8 if his team won the game. Add that dimension to it.
Okay.
Well, it's a team game, Gary.
Yep.
And then the other thing is when you go up and tell someone about your fantasy team and who's in your lineup, to me that's not unlike telling somebody about a hand you had in poker or something, because everybody's lineup consists of the same men just in different orders. It's I got this guy, no, I got that guy. I got a queen of hearts, and I got a jack of spades in this other hand. It doesn't – they're just – orders of players. There's nothing creative being said about it.
I've done a lot of stardom sit-em call-in shows over my life. And they're the worst because everyone calls in and it's all like 51 to 49 propositions. No one ever calls in and says, should I play Patrick Mahomes or Cody Kessler this week?
I will say
this.
I get
to say Patrick Mahomes.
The most fun I ever had as growing up was the summer of 2001. I played fantasy baseball because I'm not a big baseball guy, and that did get me into the sport. And so we kid and we make fun of fantasy football, but I am fully aware it has brought a lot of interest into the NFL, and for that we're very grateful. And I think fantasy players are much smarter now than they were years ago. But if you're listening to this show, you're probably sick and tired of us talking about this by now.
This was a lengthy fantasy football
conversation. Yeah, and it's my fault. I'm sorry. You can
no, that's okay. Again. Look, I made a part of my career off of fantasy football stuff, so I feel like I owe it to the fantasy football gods who I pray to and offer sacrifices do every once in a while. Indianapolis Colts going to Houston, and I gotta tell you, Andy, the Colts outplayed the Texans on both sides of the ball in this one. They were clearly the better team in this game, and you know, I don't know if they have time to catch the Texans in that division, but you know, we've sort of found new levels of how much we're impressed by the Colts time and time again this year. I thought this was one of their best performances. This win in Houston.
How about Frank Reich in the conversation for Coach of the Year? Do you think that'd be appropriate?
He's got to be. He's got to be in the conversation.
I think he has to be too, especially considering that he didn't get to pick some of his staff. His D coordinator, Matt Eberflus, who I think should be in conversation for Assistant Coach of the Year, they're working very well together. Reich has established the identity on offense. It's worked for Andrew Luck. They're getting better every week almost every week. You know, they laid the egg against Jacksonville last week. But let's look at a little bit of a bigger picture. They're getting better in the big picture, steadily improving within the context of their scheme and how they want to play. I could not be more impressed with the Colts. I think they've done a tremendous job in this year one of what I thought was going to be, and I think it was and is, a mega rebuilding project.
And they host the Cowboys next week. That's going to be a really interesting game, probably one we got to talk about on the Thursday show, on the Deep Dive show.
Absolutely, which means you just signed me up for watching the Cowboys film early in this week, which I guess I'm going to have to get it done with anyway. Those 93 plays, we'll get them out of the way. I'll do it Monday night. I'll get through one side of the ball on Monday.
That's a multi-day project right there.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, really nice win for the Colts. Very impressive. Saints come back to beat the Bucs in Tampa. They break their two-game losing streak against the Tampa Bay Bucs. This was really getting hairy for New Orleans here. I mean, they were down 14-3 at halftime. They needed a little bit of help from the Buccaneers this week. They did it with horrific special teams. They had a punt blocked. They missed a couple of inside 50-yard field goals. Cairo Santos did so. Saints got a little bit of help before pulling away 28-14 in this one, but this was some ugly offensive football, and you know, I guess the good news for the Saints, some good defensive football.
What really impresses me is the Saints ran the ball 9 times for 3 yards in the first half, and they trailed, I believe, was it 14-3 the score at halftime?
Yep.
The Bucs were leading them. And in the second half, the Saints come out trailing after not running the ball well at all in the first half, and they run 21 times for 97 yards. And that's not counting a Taysom Hill minus 6-yarder. So really, their base running game went 20 times for 100-plus yards, over 5 yards a carry. So often, teams, especially ones that have great quarterbacks, they'll get away. We just talked about with the Rams tonight. They'll get away from the run when they're a little bit behind, and the Saints thrive on being a balanced offense. They play out of base personnel. A lot of their passes come out of run concepts. We don't think about that with them, but that's what they are. So impressive by Sean Payton and Drew Brees to stay patient in this game.
It was. And look, this was a second straight problematic performance by the Saints offense. They obviously have some time to straighten things out, and they get a break with the Rams losing on Sunday night. The Saints are once again the number one seed at the moment in the NFC, and that brings us to the lightning-ish round. Let's start in Buffalo, where it was the battle between the rookie QBs Sam Darnold and Josh Allen. Darnold ends up making some Patrick Mahomes impression type of plays, not nearly as impressive, but in his own Sam Darnold way, he kind of made some nice late in the down plays in this one, and ends up bringing the Jets back. And what was a really weird game, but the Jets get 2 fourth quarter touchdowns and end up winning this 27-23. I do want to mention though, Andy. I actually want to mention two things. One, Henry Anderson threw the all-time cheap shot on Steven Hauschka after a blocked field goal in this one, just leveled him from behind, and don't know how it wasn't called. Have to think some sort of fine is coming for that one. But Josh Allen, 101 rushing yards.
Yep.
Back-to-back 100 rushes. It would have been three straight. He took two kneel downs at the end of the Jaguars game that took him from 101 to 99. So had it not been for that, he would have three straight 100-yard rushing games.
A lot of his rushing yards right now are coming on scrambles against man coverage, and that's a dangerous thing to do when you're a defense against a mobile quarterback is play man coverage, because you follow your man runs. Buffalo's also become a much more vertical offense lately. They've got a little bit of speed at wide receiver now with Robert Foster there. They're going downfield, so you follow your man as a man-to-man defender. He runs way downfield, and you're running away from the quarterback, and the quarterback has all kinds of space to scramble. That's what's going on with Allen in a nutshell. Now, the fine line with him is he using it as a crutch, or is he not seeing the field well? Because he really has not read the field well as a rookie this season. But I thought he's looked better on film lately, especially last week against Miami. And I am really eager to see how he looks this week against the Jets, a team that he has not faced because McCown played him a few weeks ago, but Buffalo's offense has faced before. So I'm excited to see how these rookie QBs looked from the academic standpoint of football. But I think Josh Allen's doing a nice job of balancing his running and his throwing. I don't feel like I don't think he's hiding something by running the ball. I think he's been pretty selective on some of his scrambles.
And as you said, I mean, look, he might have the worst supporting cast in the NFL as far as quarterbacks go. So the fact that they're generating any offense at this point is encouraging. Is, you know, you could be optimistic about Josh Allen right now if you're a Bills fan. Boy, Washington, man, this was as bad a performance as you'll see this year. Mark Sanchez was completely hopeless in this one, ends up getting benched at halftime. Josh Johnson came on. Josh Johnson, he of a thousand different teams. And actually, we have a piece coming up with Josh Johnson this week that John Wertheim's been wanting to do for a long time. But this was 40-0 Giants after three quarters, and the game was not as close as the score would indicate. Ends up being a 40-16 final. Giants just completely dominate this one. Washington is, as I told you, Andy,
you're happy, but
not a
happy.
not a contender.
Said all those 6-7 teams, though, they're all very much in it. I think Washington remains a contender.
Behind Josh Johnson is how they'll have to do it. This was horrific, though. I mean, this was as bad a performance as you'll see from an NFL team. San Francisco gets on the board. Nobody tanks in the NFL. They put that number one overall pick at risk and end up beating the Broncos 20-14. From the Broncos side of it, look, they have not been good on the road the last 2 years. But more than that, no Chris Harris in this game. Emmanuel Sanders went down with the Achilles injury in practice this past week, so that they were without him as well. Obviously, they traded Demaryius Thomas back the trade deadline. This might have been this might have been it for the Broncos. I don't know if they can come back.
I love that nobody tanks in the NFL, and I think that's the way to play. You know, Aaron Donald was drafted, what, number 13 overall, and Khalil Mack was 5, and J.J. Watt was 11, I want to say. It's not just picking players. We think about the, oh, get a good draft position, get new players. Now you have a good player. Hey, go out and win with the good player. You've got to coach these guys. You got to play with them once you get them. And Solomon Thomas is a good example of a guy that you've got to bring along and develop. And it's been a little bit spotty with him. I might be getting better, but winning matters, and winning is a great way to develop players. You got to develop the guys you have. So I love that the Niners aren't tanking, because they've got a bunch of high draft picks that they're trying to develop now from recent drafts.
By the way, 7 for 210 for George Kittle in this game. It's a big performance.
All in the first half, receiving.
Yep.
Almost set a receiving record for tight ends, and then I guess they sat on the ball in the second half, which that was the right thing to do.
That was. So nice win for the Niners here.
I kind of like Jeff Wilson, their running back. His longest run was 11 yards today, so we probably didn't see it in this game, but he's got a little bit of an oomph to the way he runs. There's some burst to him, which I'm starting to think every running back has, though, because a lot of undrafted rookies have looked really good this year running the ball.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how they make the NFL, now that I think about it. They have some burst.
that is a requisite. The slow, sluggish guys usually don't get too far. Joe Philbin gets the win as interim head coach in Green Bay. Packers win this one 34-20 after giving up an early touchdown to start this game. I don't know if the Packers were – look, they won the game, so be encouraged by that. But this was another ugly performance by the Falcons offense and another just really disappointing outing for them. They did get to the 20-point mark, but they needed a touchdown with 14 seconds left to get there in a game that they were trailing by 21 at the time. So
they're the biggest disappointment of any team, that unit. The defense, they've had some injuries. You know, although I think they could have overcome those better, but let's set that aside. This offense, this Falcons offense, is the single most disappointing unit in the NFL this season.
And finally, Lions go to Arizona and get the win. I don't have a whole lot of thoughts on this one. The Lions were solid defensively again. I think they're coming together nicely on the defensive side of the ball. Cardinals obviously have a lot of work to do at this point. And Kerryon Johnson was out in this one. The Lions went to Zach Zenner at the end of this game. 12 of their last offensive plays, 11 of them were Zach Zenner runs, and he ended up just completely milking the clock single-handedly. He ended up getting 52 yards and a touchdown on those runs. So.
He's done that before. He's done that in past years where he's a kind of a streaky runner. One thing he's good at is, for whatever reason, he's good at running the ball out of shotgun. I don't know how much shotgun I'll be honest, I didn't watch a lot of this one today because I knew we'd had some real games, competitive games to talk about. But I bet you he had some shotgun runs because he's done that before.
I kinda like
Zach Zenner.
Well, the last time they went to the playoffs in the 2016 season, he was their guy at the end of that season. So not sure why he's not a star, but I'm just not sure why they like went out and got LeGarrette Blunt.
I don't know what Blunt does that Zenner can't do for you, other than every once in a while Blunt gets hit for a gain of two and then lumbers and slowly falls down, like I said, like an animal that's been hit by a tranquilizer dart, and he finally goes down 8 or 9 yards later, and you go, LeGarrette Blunt does have some power. But I'm sure Zach Zenner could fall his way to a surprising 7 or 8 yard run once in a while too.
Yeah.
And it'd be out of shotgun.
That's a good wrap on the lightning-ish round. Thing of the week, Andy. Should I go first, or are you dying
to
reveal
one? No, I got
one.
I'm good to go.
Go for it, then, yeah.
You know who announced the game today? Maybe he's done this already. So if he has, I apologize. I haven't noticed, but I watched a lot of their game today. It's Chris Carter called a game. The Chris Carter.
Oh, really?
Was with Mark Schlereth and Dick Stockton in the booth. My guess is they're trying out Carter to see what kind of role he can have. And some people aren't going to like this because Chris Carter is a very polarizing guy, I think, professionally and to the people who know him personally. I've met him once. I don't know him at all. He was excellent, though. He was absolutely excellent calling the game, and I wouldn't mind having him call more games.
Good. Wait, which game was that? What did Stockton do?
That was the Cleveland-Carolina game.
Okay.
And he did it with Schlereth. They were a good tandem because Schlereth's pretty good at this stuff too. And you get a guard and you get a wide receiver there. Carter was totally prepared. He understood the concepts quickly. He put it in layman's terms. There was a humility to the way he said it, which isn't always the case with Chris Carter. I was highly impressed with him.
Nice. That was a nice positive ending for a bitter Andy Benoit during the show.
You've lightened me up on the show. I feel a lot. I wish we'd talked this morning. I would have had a much nicer day today because I feel better after talking to you.
Let's go. I have a Q&A for you here, Andy. I want to get your takes on these things because we kind of talked about this a little bit. You remember last week Jalen Ramsey did to Andrew Luck the I'm going to help you up psych thing, and we discussed on the Thursday show, so I guess this is part three of this conversation. We discussed on the Thursday show how Von Miller had been flagged for that a couple years ago because we didn't remember that when we did the Monday show, so we talked about it on Thursday. I have two instances. One of them from last week, which I didn't know until midweek last week. I feel like this is a time travel episode now, but I want to know your take on Russell Wilson grabbing Fred Warner's shoe and toss it. It had come off during the play. He tossed it back, and then he called a quick snap, and they ran to the line and ended up getting it offsides, which is why Kyle Shanahan was caught cussing out an official. Do you think Russell Wilson is flagged for that? Should you be flagged for that? Should it just be better game administration by the officials to say someone's missing a shoe? Let's hang on for a second here.
I think he should be flagged for it because, for one, we saw it possibly there's a competitive advantage from doing it now. If Wilson did that on purpose, that's genius. And if he did it on accident, that's really fortunate for him. And Shanahan, I think, said he didn't know which way it was. I bet they kind of know privately or have a suspicion, but he didn't say publicly. But listen, I think it should be flagged because what are the odds that the guy's ever going to be tossing the shoe 15 or 20 yards downfield to the, oh, hey, you over there lost your shoe. Here it comes. So almost every time that you're throwing someone's shoe, you're doing it to be disruptive to the other team. I remember I saw a guy do that on Eagles Cowboys Monday night game when I was 6 years old. The guy had a shoe. I don't know who it was. He emerged from the pile. He had a shoe. He was looking around whose shoe, and a Cowboy guy raised his hand. Hey, my shoe! And the Eagles player with the shoe kind of shrugged and tossed the shoe in the other direction. And my dad said that was rude, and I thought that was rude, and I felt really bad for that guy. And I remember lying in bed that night thinking, I hope his feelings weren't hurt. That's embarrassing on TV like that. Why did the guy have to throw his shoe away? Why do you have to throw the shoe away? Why not be polite out there? Why do you have to fake helping Andrew Luck up?
And even though it's formative years, that one really stuck with you. I will say, Wilson's explanation was that, you know, he was running to the line. They were going to go hurry up. He saw the shoe and thought the shoe might be in the way. If you are going to throw the shoe one way or another, you're going to throw it away from where the play. You're not going to throw it to the other side of the line of scrimmage. You're not going to.
And that's, you know what? That's a good, because when a guy has like a towel and it's in the way, they always throw it behind him. And I saw someone do that into the end zone tonight in the game, the Rams game. So maybe that was Wilson's point. And, you know, here's the other thing, though. I'm about to take back everything I just said, because as I'm thinking about it more, how can you possibly be on an NFL field, I guess, if someone steps on you? I'm trying to think, how does your shoe even come off? I'm always amazed at the number of guys who lose a shoe and then they just slip it back on their foot and they don't tie it or tighten it or anything. And I think, how can you go running out there? I tighten my shoes before walking into the grocery store because I want to have a good firm base. I can't imagine how these guys can play with anything less than perfectly tight shoes on.
Yeah.
So if you lose your shoe, you're on your own because you ought to be tying your shoes better.
Man, you have a lot of shoe takes. Really unleash something here, unlock something inside your, deep inside your psyche.
Well, what's your opinion on it?
I think you just stop the game. I think that's like
what's to stop a guy from losing his shoe on accident then, on quote unquote accident?
Well, then you look at it and you flag guys, you fine them or whatever.
You don't stop the game. That's like, did you see how mad Matt Nagy got tonight when one of his guys ran over Carl Johnson, the official, and Nagy blamed him? That's on you, Carl Johnson. You screwed us. Can you imagine the reaction if you're stopping the game for a shoe? The Bears were furious that they stopped the game for a referee's health.
I think if you were to spot someone like taking off their shoe and trying to stop the game like that, then you can flag them. Then it's a 15-yard penalty. I think
might be times where that penalty's worth it to the defense or the offense or whoever's doing that with the shoe.
We'll see. Put my rule in for a year and see how it goes. And then if it doesn't work, we'll do it your way.
I didn't know that referee rule, by the way, that if you knocked him over, that you've got to let him get up. I'd never seen that. Was fascinating, wasn't it?
I've never seen that happen. I've never seen a guy before a play get steamrolled by the guys coming off the bench.
The other thing is watching the film, because I was looking for that shoe play on Russell Wilson on the film, and I saw the play, but you don't see him with the shoe on the coach's film. So I didn't see how it went, but I did see the Jalen Ramsey psych again after we talked about it. You know, the saddest part of that was multiple referees rushed in quickly to then help
to
Andrew
help
Luck
Andrew
up.
Luck.
As if he's just been humiliated. Yeah. Like he'd been pushed and punched to the ground by Jalen Ramsey. They rushed over. Oh, he psyched you. Well, here, let's go help him. It was heartbreaking how many referees came to quickly help poor Andrew Luck, who was still writhing on the ground.
They just treated Andrew Luck like he was some poor kid from the orphanage on Christmas or something.
Absolutely.
I had one more part of my thing, and I'm actually going to give my take first, and then you can agree or disagree. But I don't know if you had seen in the Eagles game, the Eagles scored their first touchdown. You know, they started to do the group celebration, and the Cowboys defenders basically walked into it, and it looked like they were sort of half participant, really just disrupting it. Which one I thought was a brilliant move by DeMarcus Lawrence and the other guys who jumped in on that. But two, that's something that has to be outlawed because that is definitely going to spark a brawl at some point.
You think it will? So these guys can fight back and forth for field position and yards and placement, hand placement and leverage, and the whistle blows and they stop and they cool off. But then if one of these guys meanders over near the group and messes up the carefully choreographed touchdown celebration, that will set these men off into a brawl?
Yep. Yes,
yeah, you're probably
will.
Right. That's the way it works in the NFL. Yeah. Yeah.
With the amount of time and effort going into these choreographed celebration at this point, that is like the most disrespectful thing you can do.
I don't mind Lawrence doing that with the game being on Dallas's field.
Yeah, honestly, I thought it was great. I just think it's the kind of thing where if you let it happen a bunch of times, you are going to get some fights breaking out.
I'm trying to think what would happen if the league implemented a rule saying you have to let them. And we're talking about a 180 for the league, though, now. Penalizing for breaking up an organized celebration. But that's – what's I think defenses should do that more.
I mean, I like seeing it. I just think the league can't allow – I think you have to send a memo around to team just saying, you know, when you give up a touchdown, just defense has to walk away. Don't – involve yourself in the offensive celebration.
The other one is when did this whole defensive group photo thing become the trend? I'm kind of getting tired of that one.
Yeah.
You got guys that rush in off the bench. I see special teamers all the time hopping in for the group photo. They don't belong in there.
The only really good one was when the Bears on Thanksgiving did the Motown celebration. Was excellent. But there were a couple of – the defense all knew what they were doing, and there were a couple – I think like Josh Bellamy rushed into the back of it and didn't quite know what he was doing, and it was kind of like, oh, they got to – they planned the thing. Just let him do it. The group picture, you know, it's –
well, and they
whatever.
Do it off of turnovers now. They do it off of turnovers.
Yes.
Whatever happened to just doing our job? We did our job. We got the ball. Let's go back to the site. No, yeah, we don't do our jobs.
You can
– We do our jobs, and then we present it.
I'm all for celebrating as a team, but I think the posing for the picture is a little bit played out.
What I would like to see is the league issue a warrant to camera, an order to cameramen that when they do that, you turn your cameras around. Nobody take their picture when they line up to get their phone. Let them pose and nobody take their picture, and let's see if it goes away that way.
I just think they need better celebrations. Do the team celebration. That's fantastic.
At some point, these guys are going to run out of what to do with these celebrations. I don't know how they keep coming up with all this stuff.
Well, they're already recycling. I mean, you know, Michael Thomas already recycled the worst celebration in the past 20 years. The I'm going to hold a cell phone next to my face. That's not a celebration.
Yeah.
That's like
the worst part
of my day.
When Joe Horn did that, those cell phones were still kind of new in the mainstream. They were relatively – nobody called it a flip phone back then because there wasn't anything but flip phones. So it was only a cell phone. Yeah. But the other part of the, if I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Thomas, after he pulled out the flip phone, got chewed out by his coach for doing that, and then went over and had the oxygen machine on the bench, which is what Joe Horn did after the flip phone thing. So the oxygen machine was part of the homage to Horn still, which means, if I got the order this right, and let me know if I'm wrong, because I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but it means Thomas planned the celebration, got in trouble for it, and then after that walked back and just continued the planned celebration.
Yeah, but the troublesome part of the conversation was already over. Then,
but
you
don't
know,
you think if the coach had balled you out, then the guy that you told, hey, after that, bring the oxygen mask over, wouldn't you wave him off after Sean Payton's gotten mad at you?
No. You got to follow through at that point. The damage has already been done. You might as well just finish.
I don't know. Seems awfully disrespectful to your coach.
I mean, look. I don't think we talked about that celebration at all because I hated it so much and I didn't want to acknowledge it on our show. But he already had drawn the flag. If the Rams came back and won that game, then everyone's like, oh, Michael Thomas looks like an idiot. I mean, that was his personal calculus on that, that it wouldn't cost them in any meaningful way. And he was right. It didn't. They won the game anyway. And it wasn't close after that. They just flat out won. But once you start the thing, you might as well finish it. As lame as it was.
Jim Haslett's comment went after the Joe Horn thing, I think it was after that cell phone, I told this to Vontez Burfict on his way into the office when we did the 24 hours with him, because Haslett's Burfict position coach, and he hadn't heard this story. They asked Haslett about Joe Horn, and what did he think of the celebration, and immature, you know, it's immature, but you know what, it's all right, he'll grow up and learn. He's only 30. Which at the time I thought, yeah, 30, you should know better. But I'm 32, and I feel like I still do lots of dumb stuff.
Oh, yeah. When I was...
Haslett was serious when he said that, actually, as I hear myself say it now.
When I was in my late 20s, I used to look back and be like, God, I was an idiot, like, 8 years ago. And now I'm 10 years older than that, and I'm like, God, I was an idiot 10 years ago.
It just goes on and on. And I've now, unfortunately, I've gotten wise enough that I'm thinking about this on the front end, which is, man, I remember how smart I felt when I was 22, and I was such an idiot. So how big of idiot must I be now and not know it? Because it's my whole life, that's how I've been.
Yeah. That is wisdom right there, Andy. That's why we did a 15-minute tangent at the end of the show to get to that point,
to that realization. The people listening now love us. The other ones are gone. So that's this is like after the party when we're all cleaning up and it's the best heart at time of the night. The real friends are still here. This show was not too long. We didn't go over. We're not overkilling, are we? I bet we did.
No, it's fine. By the way, Bill Belichick was asked about Gronkowski on the field, and his answer was not very good. He said, yeah, well, they could have thrown it deeper. Belichick said after the game and asked why Gronkowski was on the field.
Is that what he said?
They could have run the desperado type play, which is kind of an in-between 20-yard pass, then turned it into a desperado. Obviously, it's a real disappointing ending for us. Yeah, he didn't really answer it. He didn't really have a good answer for it. There is no good answer for it. That's why he didn't have a good answer for it. I think we just covered everything. Everything that could have been covered. And we ended with a criticism of
the people who left early and didn't hear us talk about all these personal opinions we have. Now they don't know what Bill Belichick said either. So you should have stuck around. Party got good again.
That was our best thing of the week ever, and I'm glad we could end by criticizing the greatest coach of all time. That's going to do it. I'm going to wrap it, Andy. I'm going to start reading the close tag here. Thanks to today's sponsor, Hair Club. Go to hairclub.com/10things today for your free hair analysis and a free take-home hair kit. Please support them the way they support us. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. And thanks, as always, to producer Shelby Royson, who had to sit through all this nonsense. We know he heard this, so that's at least three people who will have heard the final conversation in the show. The guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. We will be back for the deep dive show on Thursday. Mini mailbag is in it, so you have a if you have a question, send it to talkback@themmqb.com or Twitter or Facebook. We're both on there. Just search our names. To get our shows as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer featuring Jenny Rentis and Connor Orr, plus the MMQB gambling podcast hosted by myself, Jimmy Traina, and Scott Gramling, just subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.